This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We all love to treat ourselves every now and then, right? Like go out and buy a nice coffee, maybe get a little extra legroom on the plane. Then why are we always settling for doctors? Your health is the most important thing. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You know how I feel about making phone calls, and that is why I discovered ZocDoc many years ago before I even had a podcast. And so I'm thrilled. This feels very full circle. I use ZocDoc all the time in LA. I still use them here in Cincinnati. It's just such a cool service to be able to put in your insurance and find a doctor for whatever your ailment might be. I actually found an ENT doctor once when I had this sinus infection, probably TMI. But anyway, I love ZocDoc. I've loved it for years. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's how easy it is. Sometimes they even have same day appointments. I know I've gotten some in the past. Go to ZocDoc.com/drink and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/drink. ZocDoc.com/drink.
We're in the end game now.
Em just put their legs into their sweatshirt as sweatpants, so we needed a moment to settle.
I'm still out of breath. My foot kept getting stuck in the hood part and not in the arm sleeve. I panicked a little.
And then suddenly I thought, why don't we sell and that's why I drink sweatpants? So
that'd be great.
Somebody, Eva, can we do that?
Eva, write that down.
Is that a thing?
I don't even know what they'd look like, but I'm excited.
Oh, they would look good though.
Oh yeah. They'd look bananas.
We'll work on that. Hi everybody.
Hello. How is everybody? Are you doing good? I'm doing good. Are you doing good? Good.
Good. How are you, Em?
I'm good. I just said it. Good. My legs are good, warm.
Finally.
I really am still out of breath. That was a real... you know when you're, like, not in shape and you can...
No, I don't know anything about that.
Like, I could feel my, like, abs where they should be, at least. I could feel it, like, twitching because I was trying to hold my core together.
I swear,
enough.
The only person I know who doesn't know that is RJ. RJ is the only person I know who doesn't know what it's like to not be in shape.
Recently, I was sitting on the couch with Allison and I like tried to lean up just to like pull the blanket out from behind me and her legs were on my lap. She could feel my stomach trembling because I could not lift the blanket out from behind me. And I'm sure RJ would be like, what are you talking about? Like, I lift other humans over my head. I don't know. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome.
It's February. We're getting through it. You guys are probably cold. I'm so sorry about that. We're doing some things. We're going to Northern California.
I don't know.
I feel like things are like, okay, this is so going to jinx it, but I feel like things are relatively calm right now.
Goodbye.
Which, okay. I think last year during tour, things were so not calm that now I'm like anxious.
Comparatively, everything is so much better than our last tour just because we did so much more prep work.
It just felt like something we were constantly behind last year. And yeah. Now I'm like, oh, I feel like we're actually like okay. Knock on wood, seriously, because now I don't want to jinx it. But
so far, so good. As of today, we're doing great. Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Tomorrow, a whole other.
Yeah, we'll get back
to
you real quick. But no, I hope everyone else is doing okay. Okay, doing great. I've been feeling very thankful for all of you listeners lately and just really reflecting and writing in my gratitude journal about you and meditating.
The fuck about me? I'm great. You grateful for me?
Oh, yes.
Okay,
sure.
That's right.
I added an 11th spot on my list just for you.
Okay, well, I didn't even know you had a gratitude journal.
I do have a gratitude journal, and I was out of it for a while because I was traveling and stuff. I'm trying to get back into it. It's actually really, calming, like comforting, because you're kind of like, okay, even if things are going bad or stressful, there are always things that you're like, oh. Mine are usually coffee because I do it in the morning. Em, you're pretty much always on there, obviously.
You're full of lies.
I'm not. You want to see it?
No, that's so sweet. And, I don't want to see it and then get emotional, so I'm going to pretend it's not real.
You folks are on there, obviously. Anyway, it's a couple of them switch throughout the day, whether I'm mad at Gio or Junie or not. but yeah, no. And so I've been trying to really be more focused on all the goodness. And I'm thankful for all of you, so thank you.
Oh my!
Now my next step, I want to go back to the lucid dreaming, so I'm gonna start getting back into that. Some tarot, I want to get back into the tarot. Someone did a really nice aura reading for me recently and sent it to me, and it made me cry. I was like,
"What does it say?"
Holy smokes! It said a lot, so I'm
not
gonna.
What color is your aura?
So, okay, I think the main one was pink, but also they said sometimes people have different interpretations of the colors.
Okay,
if that makes sense.
Sure.
So yeah, let me see. I want to just make sure I give them a shout out. Cause it was from Blair, who uses they, them, pronouns. And Blair is an empath and practicing pagan witch and is also a patron. And so during our live stream, they said they would send an aura reading my way.
Wow.
Probably cause I screamed at their face that I wanted one as a joke. And then they followed through, which was just so unbelievably kind. But yeah, so, a predominant pink, a protruding yellow, and a receding green.
Okay.
It'll sound like a starburst or like a...
It sounds like...
Elisa Frank.
Go slow down and kind of stop? Like a street light?
Yeah, like a really neon, like...
Like a pastel stoplight.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was really sweet and very... It felt like almost chilling. I was like, holy crap. Like, I don't even... This person doesn't even know me, like, well, beyond probably... the podcast, but...
Sure.
There's some stuff in here, and I was like, wowza.
Interesting.
I just read one line. They seldom make rash mistakes. I'm like, well.
Okay, Blair, you're not totally
Blair,
on it.
No,
you're
I'm
not totally on it.
I like to think I'm not too, well, okay. I can't even defend that one. But thank you, Blair, for that, by the way. That was just really, really thoughtful of you. And it really made me happy, and it made me kind of start thinking about things. And I think I'm just in one of those phases. I'm so sorry. You're just gonna have to be patient with me.
Of course.
You know my phases.
Oh, I know. I love your phases.
Aw, thank you. Nobody else does.
I mean, my phase right now is Pokemon. I mean, come on.
That's a good phase, though. I'm really on board.
It's a good phase because I'm going to be making money on it one day.
Yeah, like, I know you've had, like, your tea phase and stuff, but the Pokemon one so far I'm, like, really amped about.
Thank you. I just bought 3 new binders yesterday for all my sleeves.
Ooh.
I don't know if I've mentioned on here. I'm collecting my Pokemon cards again, by the way.
If you haven't figured it out.
No, I found all my old ones from my mom's house, and a lot of them are in pretty great condition. So I was like, I'll just fill out the complete set. So
that's amazing. I mean, that's a fun hobby.
Yeah. I came back. I bought a bunch of cards when we were gone in Texas, and I came home to them. So it was fun to, like, organize them. And
it's like an unboxing.
It was. It was.
I get FabFitFun, you get Pokemon cards.
Listen, I love my Pokemon cards. I'm trying to... I mean, it's going to take a while, but just because the ones that I want or the ones that I have but want better conditions of are wildly expensive.
Oh,
so
I imagine.
It's going to be a very slow collection, but it gives me something to do.
Your grandchildren are going to be so proud of you someday.
They are, especially when I don't give them the cards.
Yeah,
and
right.
Have
They're
sold
not
them.
Toys.
They'll really enjoy the yacht I buy with them.
I will, though. So yeah. I think this is why maybe I'm so on board with this this hobby of yours.
Yeah, so I don't know if I'm actually going to sell them or not, but I do want to eventually at least have a full complete set. So if you don't use your Pokemon cards anymore, I might take this opportunity to say, please send them to our PO
box.
Oh
my goodness. Yeah. I mean, why not?
Was it I can't I remember our address anymore.
1920
Hillhurst Ave, number 265, Los Angeles, California, 90027?
Yes.
Yeah. If you don't use your Pokemon cards anymore, by all means, please
send
them my
way. I was going to bring you some. I'm going home in a couple of days to visit family in Cincinnati, so I might check my mom still has any in the attic, because I might have some. I mean, they're probably not anything special, so I wouldn't get your hopes up. But
you'd
I'll
be
bring
surprised.
Them.
There's some of them that I didn't know were not worth anything, but like I thought for sure I had one, and I don't, and now I have to go out and search for them. So
they might
complete me.
I feel like we never talk about Pokemon. Did you watch it, or did you play the cards, or did you...
Both.
Okay.
All. I played, and I watched, and I collected when
I was
younger.
Did you play the video games?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, because I know you hate video games, so I was...
That's fair. No, I had a Game Boy Color.
Me too.
Growing up. I had the blue one, like the teal one.
I had the purple see-through one.
Okay, I know I've told you about this already, but I wasn't allowed to have the purple see-through one because my mom told me that was a boy color. Joke's on you, Mom. But It's all I ever wanted. I'm still kind of mad about it, actually.
You know you have one now, right?
I know. Oh, okay. I now have one.
Steven sent you one.
But I still, the child in me always wanted to show it off. But I had Pokemon Red, Pokemon Blue, and Pokemon Yellow.
Oh, I had Red, Yellow, and Silver.
Yeah, I had the, I guess the original three colors, and then they had like Sapphire and Ruby, or they had Silver and Gold and Sapphire.
Yeah.
I stopped caring after Red, Yellow, Blue. I stopped caring.
But you don't want to play them now?
I do play them now, actually.
On Switch?
No, on my actual Game Boy Color. It still works. But other than those three, that's like, I found my video game thing.
I just kind of assumed you never played them because I know you don't like video games, so I didn't know what your entrance to the Poke world was.
No, when I was younger, my mom and I did a lot of traveling, and so it was an easy thing for my mom to keep me busy on the airplane.
Oh, yeah. It saved, 'cause
it didn't have TVs.
It saved and stuff my mother when we traveled with her, too. Just passed the Game Boy back.
I also played the, to this day, I can't win it, but on the Game Boy Color, they had a Tarzan game. And, I was never able to get past like level 7. I'm sure most adults could get through that very well.
It was hard, those things.
And I had a Sega Dreamcast.
Nice.
That was pretty fun.
We had a Sega Genesis. Okay, I'm sorry, you guys are so fascinated with this, I'm sure. Anyway, we can talk about this on a live stream someday, maybe, if anyone wants to talk about it.
I forgot we were being recorded. We were just sitting here.
Yeah, I think we were supposed to talk about other things on this show, and I know people...
Things that are less fun.
...write mean reviews about us talking about ourselves, so let's talk about other people.
You mean people are listening to our podcast where we talk about ourselves and don't like that we're talking about ourselves on our podcast?
Well, I'm going
to
talk about someone else. This is the patron of the week. Their name is Christina P.
Hi, Christina P.
With quite an Italian last name.
Ooh.
Thank you so much for supporting Penne.
Okay.
Thank you for supporting us and for being you and having a really cool name.
And being so Italian.
Having a cool first name. The coolest.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. That is so nice. So I received this beautiful lilac shrub, and Leona and I planted it together, and we did find a creepy, like, saint statue while we were digging up the yard. But that aside, it was really a wonderful experience. The funniest part is my neighbor, Anne, hi Anne, walked past me the other day and said, "Oh, I saw your lilac bush that you mentioned on the podcast." And I thought, wow, advertising really works, folks. I talked about that lilac shrub. She saw it in my yard. And I said, Leona and I worked very hard to plant that. And I also found a creepy saint while I dug it up. But anyway, the point being, it looks professional. It looks like a landscaper put it there. And a toddler and I actually put it there. So I feel like we've fooled everyone. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code DRINK at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code DRINK at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code DRINK. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with brand new releases and next listen recommendations. There's a story for every listener, from classic favorites to exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors. Elevate your heart rate with a pulse-pounding collection of thrillers you can't hear anywhere else, all brought to life with Premier Audio. From eerie soundscapes to dynamic voice performances, you're guaranteed to be on the edge of your seat. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has your thrill needs covered. Plus, with an Audible membership, get access to thousands of titles and the chance to discover new favorites and formats, like the exclusive Words and Music series or a podcast. And Audible members can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. I have to tell you about a thriller I recently listened to on Audible. It's called None of This Is True, and it is actually about a true crime podcaster. And I was surprised how much I got into it. It has, speaking of like immersive sound, it was such a good audiobook. I actually recommended it for one of the recent And That's Why We Drink newsletters. I always go to Audible for my thriller fix. New Audible members can try Audible now for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/drink or text drink to 500-500. That's audible.com/drink or text drink to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days.
Oh my God. Okay, so my story is from your homeland, Ohio.
Hey! Oh my God, my story's from Ohio too.
Huh.
Is it about Walter?
No, it's not about Walter. So this is the story of the Ohio State / Mansfield Reformatory.
Oh, okay. Oh, I've heard about this place.
So it is the most haunted place in Ohio, fun fact. Some say it's one of the most haunted places in the country.
Besides my mom's house.
Uh-huh. Well, that's a fact. It's been seen on the Harry and Walter Go to New York show.
I do not know what that is.
Me either. It's been on Tango and Cash. It's been on Air Force One. What? Seen on Air Force One? Is
like
a show?
Someone like watched Ghost Adventures on Air Force One?
I don't know. Let's make it that one. The president has actually watched this on Air Force One.
Which president?
I don't.
Let's go with Obama, please.
Okay. Thank Michelle you. Actually Michelle! Has watched videos about the Mansfield Reformatory on Air Force One. It's also been mentioned on Scariest Stories on Earth, the place with the creepy alien voice.
Mm-hmm. Zelda.
It's yep, scary stories on Earth, and it's also been on Scariest Places on Earth. It's been on Ghost Hunters. It's been on Lil Wayne's music video Go DJ.
Oh hell yeah!
It's been on Fallen Angels, and it's been on Ghost Adventures. It's been on Ghost Hunters Academy. It's
Holy
been on
shit.
Inside Secret America and Destination America. But it's best known because it was
and that's why we drink episode.
Yes,
159.
Bingo. Also, because it was apparently the filming location for parts of Shawshank Redemption.
What? I feel like I'm such a loser. I don't know this about my own state.
It's okay. I'm going to catch you up.
Thank you.
So in 1861, the property was a training camp during the Civil War called the Camp Mordecai Bartley. But in the 1840s, it became like Mansfield. The town became Mansfield, I guess.
Got it.
And so in 1867, 6 years later, Mansfield was chosen as a build site for an immediate penitentiary, which was 180 acres and cost $1.3 million at the time.
Oh, that's a lot.
So $1.3 million in 1867. I couldn't even begin to tell you how much that costs.
$400 billion.
Okay, that sounds right. There were three design choices. Fun fact, there are three different styles to this place, so it's a little mishmash of all of them. Victorian Gothic, Richardsonian Romanesque, and Queen Anne.
Oh my God, so they really were like, Oh, this prison, what turrets do we want it to have? Like,
I mean, you were just telling me and Eva about Victorian houses, how at the time they were actually super tacky because they were so ornate.
Fun fact, everyone, Victorian houses originally were considered the McMansions of their day because they were built by typically the nouveau riche who wanted to show off their money. And so they would build these really massive, intricate houses with like big turrets and things that kind of were useless as far as architecturally speaking, but were kind of flashy and showy. And so nowadays, obviously, they're considered very historic and beautiful. And like, I love them personally, but
people at the time then apparently would laugh at us for thinking it looked beautiful.
It's like apparently very tacky and like you're showing off your wealth by like building crazy, you know, spirals and shit in your house. But yeah, so that's kind of a fun fact. Anyway,
this sounds like it was one of those tacky places because it's got a lot of really elegant, elaborate
for a jail too. Like so it's like a McMansion
penitentiary.
A McTentiary. sure.
Also, the design was meant obviously because it was like Victorian Gothic and all this. It was meant a McPrison.
Sorry, it just sounds better.
It was the design was meant to intimidate, but also encourage the inmates to become spiritually reborn. So it's supposed to also kind of look like a church.
Oh, so it's one of those.
Yeah, it's one of those.
I remember those.
Also, it was built to look like a castle, so it would look beautiful on the outside. So it was actually considered a gift to be sentenced here compared to other facilities.
You're welcome for putting you in this prison cell.
In this prison castle church. So when the first prisoners actually came there, it was such a nice looking like facility compared to other things in the area. And so townspeople lined the streets handing the first prisoners cigars as like congratulations.
Oh my goodness.
And the building wasn't completely finished yet, so the first inmates actually did have to help with construction. Oh. And the prison was done 14 years later. So if you were there for the first 14 years, part of your stay in this penitentiary was to help build the place.
That always, like, that is so scary. I remember that story you told in Florida where they had to build the gallows that they would later be hanged in.
Yeah.
Like, and you have it's to, just so disturbing.
And here you have to build your own prison.
Your McPrison.
It's like a whole other psychological torture.
It must be. And you're doing manual labor, too.
I'm sure, like, also, how was that, like how was that supervised? Like, because you would think if all these prisoners are building it, they would build secret passageways.
I would put little loose bricks in there.
Yeah.
A Shawshank Redemption style, you know, maybe little passageways.
In 1919, it was finally completed, and it was the largest self-supporting steel cell block in the world. It had 600 cells, and it was six stories high.
Wow.
It was a mid-level, moderate security prison for the first-time offenders, and the goal was just rehabilitation, so it was very progressive for its time.
Okay.
It had vocational schooling on-site. The facility was self-sustaining. It produced its own food, and 90% of the inmates, when they left, they ended up not reoffending. So,
oh wow,
it was doing its job.
That's pretty incredible.
And in 1891, it was officially changed to the Ohio State Reformatory, not the Mansfield Reformatory.
In what year?
1891.
Got it.
In that same year, Phoebe Wise owned a farmhouse across the street. Okay.
Oh, good for her.
remember Phoebe.
Okay.
Can you imagine if I don't mention Phoebe for the rest of...
I love that. That's the best.
Maybe I should start doing that in all of my haunted house stories. I'll be like, and across the street lived Benjamin.
He had a yo-yo.
Yeah. Good for him. Just to like bring some light to this story.
I really like this fun fact that you just gave me.
Who the fuck is Phoebe Wise? We'll find out. So in 1891, Phoebe Wise lived across the street in a farmhouse. People thought Phoebe was rich, but she, just because she didn't trust banks, so they thought, like, oh, she must, like, have all of her money held somewhere else. So rumors of her having a fortune hidden in the house started circulating the area, and three men broke into her house, tied her to a chair, lit a torch under her feet, demanding her fortune.
Oh my God.
Burning her feet until she, like, came clean about where her money was.
Oh no.
But she didn't have anything. She just didn't trust banks. And so when they left, she untied herself and walked to the jail to report everything since there were guards there. She's like, this just happened across the street to me.
Holy shit.
And she became a local celebrity. A guy named Jacob heard about her and started stalking her because he was so impressed with her story.
Oh, ew. Okay, ew.
So now a second round of horror is happening.
Come on, this woman can't get a break.
We should have just ended it at she bought a house across the street.
Well, I liked Phoebe when she had her yo-yo across the street.
So Jacob got into stalking her and showed up at her house one night, tapped on the window, knocked on the door, and watched her through her windows.
Don't fucking do that, people.
Apparently this became pretty common, and one night came to her house and yelled, "Marry me or kill me, Phoebe." And so she pointed a rifle through the window and shot him. She's like, get the fuck away from me.
She's like, you told it me to.
So the Mansfield News Journal the next day had a headline that Phoebe Wise rids herself of an intolerable nuisance.
Cockroaches? Pests? No.
Jacob. So after she died in 1933, locals believed that she still had a fortune, and so they broke in and tore apart her floors and walls.
What in the world?
But before that, when she had untied herself and gone to the police, and then she started getting stalked, the reason that she became such a big name in town was because she also then became a hermit because she was terrified of the fact that someone broke in and lit her feet on fire.
Yes, and so I that's why so.
She started getting stalkers because they were curious about what happened to her. But
she started getting stalkers because these people were
they wanted her fortune or they wanted to marry her. Apparently
they were being bad people and being stalkers.
Well, also the reason I mention this now is because she became a hermit, obviously. People started getting curious about her. She started talking to the animals near her. She started being known for shouting loudly out the window to get people's attention. She also, apparently, to the local children, was a witch.
Right. That checks out for, childhood lore, I guess.
Mm-hmm. So I'll bring that up later, but Phoebe Wise is now the witch across the street from the Ohio State Reformatory.
Okay, interesting.
So in the 1960s, the reformatory was getting overcrowded, and it was breeding conflict, and 10 years later, they declared it was now a max security program, and dangerous criminals were also getting sent there after it was already overcrowded. Now there's, like, really scary criminals also crowding this place. So the prison's focus shifted from reform to just punishment, just to keep people at bay. and it got a reputation for inhumane conditions.
Let me guess, the reoffender rate went up or went down.
Oh, I'm sure.
Or whatever the percentage was.
I'm sure of that. There was an a reputation for extreme violence between the inmates. There was excessive daily shakings and beatings from the guards.
Shakings? Oh,
there
God.
Was poor nutrition, pest infestations, diseases. Occasionally, the inmates were thrown over the catwalks.
Holy shit.
Just to get them away. I don't know.
What the fuck?
Apparently, there were a few types of torture. One was called the butterfly.
No, I don't like this.
There was electro torture. There were water hoses. There was a sweat box. And there was the hole.
What's the butterfly?
I think we get to it in a little bit. Ironically, the chapel was also now an execution room.
Oh, my goodness.
Many were tortured and hanged there.
Oh, my God.
Many also died of suicide. One in particular was in cell 13. It was an inmate named James Lockhart who doused himself with stolen turpentine and paint thinner, set himself on fire in the cell.
Oh, my God.
The cellmates said that his body peeled off in chunks.
Oh, my God.
As they dragged him to the infirmary.
Oh, no.
So they were just trying to get him to the infirmary, and he was falling, literally falling off of himself.
Ugh.
Over 200 people have died here. They were buried outside in the cemetery, including two guards in the 1920s. One was Urban Wilford, who was shot by an inmate named Philip. In 1932, another guard, during an escape attempt, was beaten to death by inmates, and his name was Frank. In 1948... there was a murder on the property when the superintendent, wife, and daughter were kidnapped and shot by two parolees execution style.
Holy shit.
And these two parolees were considered the, quote, mad dog killers. They planned the murder for years because the superintendent apparently used to abuse them. So they thought, well, we'll just kill you and your family.
But the daughter, oh no.
In the 1950s, the new superintendent was Arthur Glatke. He was a superintendent for 20 years and lived in the administration area with his wife, Helen, because at the time, I guess you also lived on site. I see.
That doesn't seem like a good idea anymore after that first murder, but okay, right. Sure.
He actually tried improving the conditions. He played slow music on the speakers to keep inmates calm. He was well respected. And one day, Helen was looking for her jewelry box in the closet and accidentally knocked over a loaded gun off the shelf. It went off and shot her. She died 3 days later.
Oh my God.
And a few years later, Arthur died in his office in the administration area. He died years later.
Oh, I thought you said days later.
Oh, no. Yeah, a few years later, he died in his office.
Oh, she died 3 days, sorry, after the shoot.
Yeah.
That is horrifying.
That's two more deaths, but they were actually respected.
She was looking for inmates. Her jewelry box. That's really sad.
So the hole. Solitary confinement, total darkness. You are starved. You're not given food. And you sleep on concrete floors, which were roach and rat infested. And there was only supposed to be one person per cell, and there were 20 cells. But I'm sure with overcrowding, a lot of people were getting shoved in rooms meant for one person. In 1957, a riot broke out among 120 inmates, and all of them were put in the hole, which meant 6 men per cell for an entire month. So a space meant to fit one person had 6 people in it, and you were there for 30 days.
And they were starving and in pitch black.
Yes.
I mean...
And probably, like, honestly, like, this is really gross, but, like, defecating on each other and, like, sleeping, standing up, and...
I can't even imagine.
In one of those cells... where 6 men were now shoved in there for 30 days, the guards accidentally paired up 2 of the most violent inmates who hated each other.
Uh-huh.
They fought, and no guards came, so one was killed, and the guards didn't find out for a month.
Oh my God.
Because they weren't going in to feed them or take care of them. They literally just... the guards closed the doors and opened them 30 days later.
And can you imagine being that person, though, to be like, okay, it's been 30 days. Hey, Jim, you go open the cell now.
Right. The second someone goes and opens the door, they're going to beat the shit
out
of you.
You would think so. Or
maybe
they would
eat you.
They would want to.
So the guards didn't find out for a month. And so the guard that was killed was stuffed in the bedding when they found him.
Wait. Sorry. So
the two guards, the two... inmates who hated each other, one of them got killed by the other and stuffed in the bedding, and they found out a month later.
Oh, the prisoner got stuffed in the bedding.
Yeah, and the guard found out a month later.
Got it.
Um, The infirmary was no better at this point. It was full of neglect. Many people starved because they couldn't fight off inmates that stole their food because they were just lying there helpless.
Sure.
In 1978, the Council for Human Dignity filed a lawsuit for inhumane conditions. And in 1986, the prison was forced to be closed due to delays and didn't close for actually another 4 years. The last inmate to actually be transferred was 4 years after it was demanded to be closed.
Man.
In the 1990s, the building was supposed to be torn down, but Shawshank location scouts loved the prison so much and ended up saving the building because they wanted to film parts of Shawshank Redemption there.
Cool.
So after the movie, preservationists convinced the state not to tear any more of the building down. So the front of it is saved. The rest of it has been destroyed. But in 1995, the Mansfield Reformatory Preservation Society was formed and turned the prison into a museum. So the Preservation Society is trying to restore the jail to its original state, and it's open almost year round. And they also have a Shawshank Trail tour, which shows you like behind the scenes stories.
That's really cool. I would love to do that.
That sounds fun.
I love that movie.
Also, there's a Halloween themed haunted prison experience.
Oh, I don't want to do that part. You can do that part.
Where there's actors and animatronics and stuff like that. They also offer public and private ghost hunts and ghost walks for children, ghost hunt classes, and special ghost events.
Ghost hunt classes! That's fun!
Precious. Precious.
And ghost events for children. Oh my gosh, I love this so much.
So they offer three types of guided ghost tours. The History Meets Hollywood, which I assume has something to do with Shawshank Redemption. Mm-hmm. Beyond the Bars, and the Inmate Tour.
Ooh, that sounds spooky.
They all sound good.
Yeah.
And many of the Preservation Society's tour guides are former inmates, so they're also helping give them jobs and things like that, but they also have their personal experience.
Inmates? That is wild.
So they also have the personal experience, so they will straight up tell you things that they experienced when they were prisoners.
That's
there.
Like at Alcatraz when that guy was there to sign books and he had been a prisoner.
Mm.
You remember that?
Yeah.
He like was one of the prisoners and he wrote a book and he was there signing books at Alcatraz.
I remember you got me a cup from that day.
Yeah. I also got you a copy of that book, I think. Didn't I?
No, I think you just got me the mug and then you got me a flag.
Okay, maybe I'm making that up.
I remember you telling me about the book, though.
Huh.
One of the... So this is a quote from one of the tour guides, I think. One of them was there in the 1960s and another was... Oh, this is the Preservation Society talking about how they're hiring... former inmates to work there.
Okay.
One of them was there in the 1960s and another was there in the 1980s. So their tours are totally different because they were in the same cell blocks but under different laws.
Right.
So they can give the history better than most. So it works out well for everyone.
That is so interesting.
They also host the Music and Tattoo Festival, a murder mystery dinner theater, a beer fest, and a 7K Shawshank Hustle run.
Sorry. What? I would like to be a part of this. Not the run, but everything else.
They, like, know how to market themselves,
seriously,
I guess.
Seriously, I am... This is so cool.
So, now I'm just going to tell you the guests. The ghosts.
The guests.
Well, the eternal guests,
yeah,
if
yeah,
you will.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, in the admin area, there are apparently shadow people. People hear voices and see they hear voices and footsteps. Mm-hmm. They sense being watched. They feel gusts of cold air. They've heard a man or a woman whispering. They've smelled roses, which apparently is Helen's perfume, one who shot herself by accident. People have smelled cigars. Helen has actually been seen walking to the bathroom. In the attic, there's a quote from someone saying, "Let's just say a very well-known paranormal celebrity had an experience up there and refused to go back in. I'm not going to say who it was. I'll just say that he grabbed his scarf and walked out." I don't know who wears a scarf.
CB.
Is it ZB?
I would think maybe.
I don't think he would ever walk away from a challenge, though.
That's true. He would yell at it.
Anyone know a ghost?
But maybe that's why it's a secret.
Maybe. But then he should have said, like, he grabbed his, like, bag of extra biceps and walked out.
He grabbed his GNC protein powder.
He grabbed his acid wash jeans. So in the basement, there are two different entities down there that... they're avoided even when the building was a jail. So people will see a boy running or hiding, and others will sense a, quote, malicious presence. Where flashlights have stopped working, they have gotten the sense of being choked.
Oh.
There's an apparition of a guard with, quote, sinister vibes.
He's got some sinister vibes.
Honestly, vibe check. He's kind of, like, sinister.
Do you not see my neon sign, good vibes only?
People have felt a cold breeze and heard whispers, and psychics have actually spoken to a 14-year-old boy who says that the inmates cornered him and beat him to death.
What? A child?
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. Okay.
There's also been EVPs of a little boy whispering and saying, hey.
What is this child? This is terrible.
I don't know. They think that it might have been like a family member visiting a guard or maybe visiting even one of the prisoners.
Lordy. Okay.
In the cell blocks, inmates have told guards that they were scared at night because they felt like something was touching them at night in the dark. They felt... Imagine being an inmate and no one's even giving you the time of day to explain what's going on.
And like, you're stuck in there, obviously.
And you're like, help, I don't want to be here in the middle of the night. And they're like, too bad you're in jail.
Well, and I'm sure it doesn't help that you don't want to like admit to everyone that you're scared.
Right.
You know?
But they felt hands touching them at night. They felt something grabbing at their bed sheets. They reported being tucked in by something.
Oh, God!
And people hear running in the halls and cell doors slamming on their own. People have experienced tapping noises on the walls. They'll see shadow figures pacing in the cells. Mm-mm. And people have been pushed. There have been photos of apparitions. And there's even an EVP of someone saying, please don't touch me. And it's like, dude, I don't want to touch you.
No, thank you.
No problem.
Don't touch me. Back.
Yeah. You don't touch me. I don't touch you. We're fine.
Quid pro quo.
So there's a chair room on the third floor.
A chair room?
There is a, yeah, huh. I don't know why.
Oh, that's it?
I'd love to have a chair room. There's a chair room that, chair in the room.
I was like, you need to explain this to me.
I would love a chair room.
Yeah, same.
I'd love a couch room, really.
I'd love just like a blankets and pillows room.
Yeah. So there is a chair in the room on the third floor that always moves back to its original spot. So if you move it anywhere else, you will hear it slide back after you leave.
Forget it. Never mind. I don't want that room. M can have that room.
One guy said he was going to smash the chair and turn it into firewood. And then something shoved him.
Mm.
And he felt burning on his back and giant welts appeared.
He's like, I'm going to turn you into firewood, man. That's what is that guy's chair? He's like, don't touch my chair.
Maybe. I imagine it's someone's favorite chair.
Yeah.
And then they died. And now people try to fuck with the chair.
Why
and they're
are they
like,
touching my chair?
They're like, give me back my fucking chair.
Don't set my chair on fire, you asshole.
That's like, I imagine someone's grandpa is still pissed that like their Barca Lounge
yes!
is being sat in
exactly!
by someone else.
Like the dog took it over. It's like, no, that's my goddamn chair.
And then if someone's like, I'm going to set this Barca Lounge on fire, grandpa yeah, comes back and is like, I don't think so.
Shoves you. Sets you on fire, right. I guess.
So, in the chapel, people get grabbed a lot. Awesome.
Great.
There are strange lights and photos. There are unexplained noises. Spirits are seen lingering in the doorways, and people hear shouting, screaming, and crying. And then there's Elmo.
Oh?
Who...
Tickle me?
Don't tickle this one. And don't let him tickle you back.
I really won't let him tickle me back. Don't you worry about that.
Apparently, so Elmo is the name for what appears as a red glow in the shape of a literal Muppet. It looks like fucking Elmo.
What?
It looks like a big anthropomorphic blob that's red.
No.
And it shows up in many guests' photos.
Oh, ew.
So here's a quote. If you see the red glow in your pictures, Elmo is posing.
Oh, no.
Elmo is allegedly demonic. You don't say.
Allegedly.
And invokes fear and anger, and accidents happen when he appears. So guests are pushed on the stairs. People have been forcefully struck with something that they can't see. But I mean, it's literally like, oh, if you see a picture, if you take a picture there and you see Elmo, you look out because he's
look out.
Elmo's gonna tickle you a little too hard.
Yeah, this is like Elmo's doppelganger, the one that like in a parallel universe is just like violent and evil.
Yeah, it's just demonic Elmo.
Oh, demonic Elmo. That sounds demonic. Muppets are not something I want to get involved
demonic
with.
Demonic Muppets. Now that's a Jim Henson original.
Oh wait, that's true. I guess Elmo is not Jim Henson, huh?
Oh no, Sesame Street.
Sesame Street. Hmm.
I would still consider him a Muppet, even though he's not like on Kermit the Frog's team.
I guess I don't know if that's trademarked.
It's kind of like Disney and like the Looney
like
Tunes.
Pixar. Oh,
I was gonna say like Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse.
Sure.
Like I still think of them on the same pedestal. Just
different exactly.
Companies.
They're probably like cousins or something.
Yeah, something like that. Like Elmo has the knockoff. It's not easy being red. You know. So
it's not easy being red.
So wait, you know what's interesting though is my dad growing up. My nickname since I was a baby, my dad always called me Elmo.
Uh-oh.
And you dance like Kermit.
Oh, shit!
It's not easy being red, guys. I'll tell you what.
Hold on. That is weird.
Are we the Muppets?
Are we? You're the off-brand Muppet.
Interesting.
I'm the real Muppet.
Interesting. The Here for the Booze logo for our new tour was actually created by someone who has worked for the Jim Henson Company. So are we Muppets wearing Muppets?
I'm getting really thrown. This is crazy.
Don't sue us.
We have told them that multiple times now.
I'm going to keep saying it.
But we're going to keep saying it. But Holy shit, yeah, huh?
I think we're Muppets.
It's about time we reveal to you our true selves.
So
there's a demon. Okay, yeah. Got it.
We are the demonic Elmo.
Actually, it checks out. It checks out. I dance like a fucking demon, I tell you what.
That's the truth. So apparently if there's a cluster of three orbs in your photo, then that's like Elmo like plus the Trinity, which is like a mocking of the Trinity. So it's like super demonic.
God.
So you will smell something rotten and your electronics will malfunction. If
oh
you see three red glowing things in your pictures. In the infirmary, there are gusts of wind in closed rooms and disembodied moaning. There are orbs and high EMF reads. In the graveyard, objects will move by themselves, equipment will fail, and it's now forbidden from entering. Fun fact.
I believe it.
In the library where Helen died, Helen has been seen gliding across the room, and objects will fall to the floor and move on their own.
Oh, dear. She's looking for her jewelry box.
She's like, where the fuck is that jewelry?
I need those earrings, man.
On the stairs, guests are shoved or slapped on the back. People will hear evil laughter, and some people will feel pressure on the small of their backs or arms as if they're being helped up the stairs.
Oh,
ugh.
Yuck.
Like, thank you for helping.
I guess, thanks.
I feel like they'd be leading you up just to push you down.
Yeah, probably true.
The hole, people still to this day get really nauseous.
I don't think I could even go in there. That would be...
It sounds too dark.
Seems too much for me.
People get nauseous. People feel like they're being watched. People have felt breath on their necks. People have seen glowing eyes. They've heard shuffling in halls. And they've heard deranged babbling. People have heard growling, they've heard crying, and sounds of cell doors being banged on. They've seen shadow figures that are regularly roaming the halls and the hole.
Oh, God.
And tour guides often think that they're missing guests because a certain amount of people will show up on the tour, and then halfway through,
oh my God,
it looks like there's less people, but it's the same amount of people, which means ghosts
Goose cam.
Showed up for the tour and then disappeared halfway through.
Yikes.
Or it will look like new people have joined the tour, and it's really ghosts are now. They're like, this is my favorite part.
They're like, where's your paid ticket?
They're like, I'm here for this one. This is my favorite. This is my favorite part.
I'm Elmo. I want to hear you talk about me.
And then I'll go away.
I'm very vain.
So there are hundreds of EVPs, apparently. Visitors have been scratched, had their hair pulled. They've seen apparitions following them. There's camera evidence of spirits walking through the jail at night and following tours. So if you look at... behind the tour, like a couple feet behind them, will be a shadow figure.
I hate that. This is why you don't ever go the last person in a tour. You can't on ever. These kind of things. I put me
but
right
also,
in the middle.
Like, really, do you want to be in the middle? Because then you're surrounded by maybe five random spirits who weren't there originally.
Well, as long as... Fuck, I don't know,
Just don't go at all. Also, in cell 13, where the guy caught himself on fire and was literally dripping off of his body, people have gone numb in his cell. And apparently, the guy that set himself on fire will show himself to guests, and he will still be on fire.
Oh, no.
People have also witnessed Phoebe, our good pal the witch.
Phoebe, she's back!
She has been seen staring out of windows and walking on the road between her house and the jail, almost as if she's still replaying that energy of her walking
the traumatic
to the jail.
Night, yeah.
There are even reports of her asking to hitch a ride to the reformatory and vanishing in your car.
Oh, God. Oh. She's like, my feet were just set on fire. Can I hop in?
Yep. And then disappearing. And that's the Ohio State Mansfield Reformatory.
I am actually, like, full on. Look at my goose cam right now. Holy smokes.
Yay.
That was a good one.
I spooked you.
That one spooked me good, man.
You're welcome.
Ooh.
I hope I spooked others.
Wow.
I still can't get over how, matter of fact, I was like, oh, and then someone across the way bought a house. Her name's Phoebe. The end.
There was like a pause and I was like, well, you did that with the chair room at first too. You're like, there's also a chair room. And in the downstairs, I was like, wait, hold on.
Can you tell that my notes, like, it takes a second for me to register even what I fucking wrote.
We get so wrapped up in like telling it that sometimes your words kind of don't.
Well, because also when I'm like writing the notes, I'm not thinking about how I'm going to say them later. So then when I'm saying them, I'm like, oh, now I have to edit them on the spot.
Yeah, your thought
process.
You'd
think after like almost 200 episodes, we'd be better at this.
You'd think, but... You'd think wrong.
If thinking about salsa in a variety of delicious flavors and heat levels makes your mouth water, you need to check out Green Mountain Gringo.
and make sure to turn the jar around and take a look at its clean backside, a list of its all-natural ingredients. Of course, that's what I meant, of course. And all their products are preservative-free, too. With the medium salsa, you get hearty chunks of tomatoes, tomatillos, peppers, and onions in every scoop. I'm reading the ad and my mouth is watering. Anyway, the hot salsa brings flavorful heat to every meal with each bite containing jalapenos, serrano peppers, and other savory herbs. Plus, they've got a hot sauce with a tangy, spicy flavor that enhances the simplest of meals. It's perfect for avocado egg toast or tacos. I sort of feel like they're reading my mind because I put salsa on almost everything, but specifically, I use their salsa. I use usually the medium salsa and then also the hot sauce on my avocado egg toast. And I don't know how the script knew that. Maybe everybody eats this, but I always make toast with avocado and then I put scrambled eggs on top and I put salsa. I can't eat it without salsa. And the Green Mountain Gringo is always there for me in the fridge because it really adds to, I mean, any meal if you're me, but definitely the eggs avocado toast situation. Visit greenmountaingringo.com and start shopping. Use the store locator to find Green Mountain Gringo products, get inspiration for recipes, and purchase products using promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off. That's promo code PODCAST24. And don't forget to check out their backside.
So you got engaged. Congrats. Now you may be wondering what's next. If you're planning a wedding, the first thing you need to know about is Zola. In fact, I actually shout this at any friends I have who are engaged because it saved my life when I was planning my wedding. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place, including venue options and all your vendors. Plus, you can design save the dates and invites, build a free wedding website, create your registry, and stay on track and on budget throughout the entire process with their free planning tools. I tell my friends Zola is a one stop shop, right? This is the key to planning a wedding. I didn't even have a wedding planner. I used Zola and they were so helpful on every front. Everything from save the dates to a wedding website to online RSVPs to finding vendors. With Zola, you can plan your entire wedding in one convenient place. From the day you get engaged and search for the venue to the day you send out your save the dates, make your registry, and even taste your cake. Zola has literally everything you need to make the whole process super easy and actually enjoyable. There's even a 5-star app that helps you plan on the go or on your couch. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
I'm going to take a little slurpy slurp of my Starbies.
Okay. So, hello everyone. My story today is also Ohio adjacent.
Interesting. I think
it's mostly Kentucky. Well, it's a mix. We'll see. So this is the story of Donald Harvey, the Angel of Death.
Angel of Death. Wow.
Yikes. So I want to first list my sources real quick. I listened to an episode about him on True Crime All the Time podcast. I got articles from ThoughtCo, All That's Interesting, The New York Times, and People.com. Those were my main sources, and used some Wikipedia-ing, obviously.
Mm.
So let's crack into it.
Okay. Let's crack a whack it. No? Okay.
I like it.
Also, can we mention the thing that I invented now beyond bananas?
Oh, yes, please. Oh, we love this. Okay, you know how we always say bananas? Well, M took it a step further.
I don't know why this happened. It just felt right. And so
we were all in the car in Texas after a show.
Yeah, and then someone, I think Eva was talking about something, and instead of me going, well, she sounds bananas, I just went, she sounds noodles.
And just kept staring at their phone, and we were like, what did you just say?
I wasn't thinking. I just decided to say noodles that time.
Eva lost her GD mind. Like,
she went kind of noodles.
I have never heard her laugh this hard at anything.
I felt so good. My ego was at like an all-time high. I was like, wow, I've never heard Eva laugh like this.
And she was laughing so hard that I got distracted from laughing myself. And so it was like funny to watch Eva laugh. I don't know, but...
Anyway, now I'm switching it up. Every now and then I'm going to take out the bananas and say noodles.
And then later that night, I had a bad experience with a Postmates driver, and M said, he's the mayor of Noodletown.
He is. He's the fucking mayor. Oh, and then you weren't here. I forgot to tell you the new thing.
Oh, God, okay.
So Eva and I flew back earlier than Christine, so it was just me and Eva getting onto the plane, and we were talking about how things were noodles and how there was, like, a mayor of Noodletown. And then I realized, like, wait a minute, doesn't your, like, weird game, don't they, like, propose with spaghetti and shit? And so I was like, isn't your spaghetti friend, like, the governor of Noodletown? So I don't know if I'm saying any of it right.
I don't know what you're totally talking about. I think you know you're talking about Stardew Valley.
Yeah, that guy. But don't they, like, spaghetti
no,
on their head?
Eva does that. Eva did that.
Oh.
Eva walked around with spaghetti on her head and handed it to Sebastian.
So Eva's the governor of Noodletown.
We always knew it. Eva's the governor of Noodletown.
I had a hunch.
Well, there was a part where I accidentally murdered the governor in the game.
You did?
Well, I don't want to go there. It was really
What did
bad.
You hold up?
Well, so here's the thing is, like, there was a stew and they said, put something in the stew. And so I was like, oops, I forgot to bring my ingredients. But, like, who else will know? So I put in some tree sap. It was the only thing I had with me. And then it was like, he died. And then everyone was like, who did this? And I was like, Blaze, they don't know it's me. And he's like, it's a video game. Of course they know it's you. Like, you're the one that caused this.
I literally, this sounds like such an acid trip. I feel like this is how my parents heard me when I was a teenager with, like, all my, like, slang jargon. And you're like, well, they asked me to bring stuff for a stew, but then I brought sap, and then, like, the governor died. And
yeah.
And they're like, what the fuck are you
doing? And I was like, Blaze, I can't tell anyone. And he's like, Christine, it's, like... It things only happen because you do them. It's a video game.
The,
like,
best part is you can tell me and I'll never tell a soul except for this podcast.
Oh, but I've, like, told literally everyone.
I don't know what you're talking about.
And
at
then
all.
Next year I had to Google what to give the governor because I couldn't seem to make him happy.
Well, you did
you
poison
have to give
him
a gold carrot, so if you're wondering.
Oh, but not spaghetti. I'm really hung up on the spaghetti thing.
Yeah, the spaghetti, that's Eva, because at first she didn't realize how, like, when you carry an item, you hold it above your head, but she didn't, like, know that, so she just kept walking around with spaghetti, and she just didn't know how to get rid of it.
Sounds like the way I want, like, some, one day when I own a castle, and I expect a banquet every night, I hope all of the servers just hold the most exquisite foods over their head, and then just bestow them to me.
Yeah, and then if you walk up to somebody while you're holding an item, you give it to them, and she didn't know that, and she had just bought the spaghetti for herself, and so she walked up to someone to talk to them and handed him the spaghetti, and he was like, I don't like this, and she's like, that's my damn spaghetti, I bought it for myself! Anyway.
I'll never get it, but I love it anyway.
I keep trying to explain it, which is just so stupid. Why?
Anyway, it sounds noodles.
Anyway, it is noodles, and it is Stardew Valley, and apparently Animal Crossing is coming out soon, so I'm gonna be on that game, so just get ready, Em.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I know. Okay, let's see. Let's get back into this. So, Donald Harvey. Why did we talk about any of that?
I don't know.
I don't know where that came from.
Something about bananas.
I guess so. Anyway, so Donald Harvey, born April 15th, 1952, in Butler County, Ohio, pretty close to where I'm from.
Mm.
His parents moved to Boonville, Kentucky when he was pretty young. And, wow, shocker, he didn't have a great childhood.
Oh, Kelsapries.
Kelsapries! That's Em's other thing that I love.
By the way, we were watching Degrassi the other day, as we do, and Allison was like, out of all these characters, which one would I be? Which one would you be? And then she told me that I would be, like, there's this one girl, Paige, who everyone kind of knows in the early seasons as, like, being the kind of, like, the Queen Bee, Regina George, like, bossy, you know, the one that no one really likes because she's, like...
The Queen Bee.
The queen bee, very high maintenance and all that. And Allison was like, oh, you would be Paige for sure. And I was like, how on earth am I Paige? And then out of fucking Paige's mouth 3 minutes later in Degrassi, she fucking goes Kelsapries.
There you go. I was actually like, yeah, I fully agree with Allison, to be honest.
I do love a good dose of drama.
Em is a fucking queen bee, I tell you what.
Just a queen.
Right.
Okay, let's go.
I'm just your fucking jester holding up your noodles above my head.
That's exactly my fantasy.
Actually, like, you're really like the emperor, and I'm just wandering around like trying...
Emperor.
The emperor trying to... in the empire, and I'm just fucking the jester. I'll take it.
I love it. Moving on quickly. Sorry.
Okay, love my... So, he did not have a good childhood. Kelsapries, Em says.
And Paige.
His mother basically said, oh, his childhood was filled with love and happiness, but it wasn't. It was later revealed that Harvey suffered through quite a bit of abuse at the hands of adults in his life, most notably his uncle and his male adult neighbor. He also suffered a head injury as a child.
Interesting.
And as we know, studies have shown that many mass murderers and serial killers have something in common. They have suffered a head injury as a child. And the theory is that brain injuries are linked to acquired sociopathy. So all this to say, Harvey had a troubled start, and it's not looking good.
Not looking hot.
From day one. Especially because another common trait among murderers is abuse during childhood as well.
Sure.
So... fast forward to 1970. Harvey, at this point, is 18 and living in Cincinnati. Who day?
Okay. In Sinville. Anyone call it that? The Sinner's Town.
Sin City.
Is that what they call it?
No, that's Las Vegas.
Okay. Oh, right. I didn't know that. Okay. Can we start calling it Cincinnati with an S? Because it sounds more appropriate for you.
Cincinnati. Oh, yeah, sure. They do call it Zinn with a Z because it's a German town. Like, it's a German town.
Of course
town.
It's a German. Of course Cincinnati. That's where your parents went when they came here.
I just
here.
Assumed you knew that. I mean, it was called Porkopolis because that's, like, where they manufacture all the pork.
What?
You didn't know this?
Literally not at all.
It's called Over the Rhine. Like, it's, like, the Rhine
Oh,
river.
I know. Over the Rhine.
Is it downtown area because of the Rhine River in Germany? Anyway, whatever. Yes.
What? Wow, a lot of things are clicking.
Oh.
A lot of things are clicking.
I thought you hurt yourself.
No, just my brain.
I hurt your brain, sorry. Yeah, no, it's a very, very, very German town. What a shocker to everyone. Yes. Let's see.
Head injuries. Wasn't looking hot for Harvey.
Thank you. 18 years old, living in Sin City. Sin, whatever.
Sinning Cincinnati.
Sinning in Cincinnati. Yes. There we go. His grandfather was sick and staying at Marymount Hospital in London, Kentucky, so he decided to go stay at the hospital to help care for his grandfather. Over time, he became a familiar face around the hospital. There were nuns and nurses who worked there, and they grew pretty used to him being around. In fact, they grew so accustomed to his presence that they offered him a job there as an orderly. He accepted this job. He was only 18, remember? And he was placed into a position where not only was he just supervising patients on his own, he was also now dispensing medication and inserting catheters, despite being 18 and having, like, zero medical training.
I mean, it sounds horrible.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. So let's just say the power went straight to his head. Only 2 months into the job, he snapped. One of his patients was a stroke victim named Logan Evans, who grew angry with him and ended up rubbing feces on his face. And in return, Harvey lost control, grabbed a pillow, and smothered him to death.
Oh my God.
He's, again, only 18 at this point. Then he cleaned himself up and announced Mr. Evans' death to the rest of the staff. And let's just say at this point, things went downhill. Over the next 10 months, Donald Harvey killed 15 more patients.
Holy crap.
And typically by smothering them or hooking them up to faulty oxygen tanks.
Okay, well, yeah. Great.
But because most of Harvey's victims were either older or in such poor health, no one suspected him because he kind of played it off as they were older and sick and died of natural causes or their illnesses. Plus, he was so mild-mannered and calm. Like, I mean, literally the day he showed up, they were like, hey, you want to put in catheters? 18-year-old that has never done any medical...
Can you imagine of all of the jobs to give someone who has no background in it, you give them inserting catheters?
Truly. Can you imagine if you found out that, like, your medical provider was this 18-year-old kid who was just there because his grandpa was sick?
Can you imagine if you found out they were about to put a catheter in you and the person who's going to do it is someone who's never done it before?
It's like a teenager... Who's never even... Oh, my God.
Who also isn't really passionate about this job.
Who literally just wants to murder people. Anyway, yes, exactly. So no one suspected him because he was so mild-mannered. So mild-mannered, like I said, they even just let him do whatever the hell he wanted. And he had his own patients. So outside of work, his life was not much better. He was super depressed. He often contemplated suicide. He had actually two relationships at this point. He had met a man named James Peluso. And they were on and off lovers for 15 years. And side note, he later killed him when he was too ill to take care of himself. So jeez. That's a fun fact for you.
Oh, fun indeed.
But perhaps more notable, Harvey was also involved with a man named Vernon Midden, who was a married man with children who worked as, get this, an undertaker.
Interesting. I see where we're going here.
Interesting. So unsurprisingly, Harvey spent a lot of time with Vernon. He had a lot of questions about the human body and how it reacts to different forms of trauma. He also later admitted that when their relationship went south, he entertained fantasies of embalming Vernon while he was still alive.
Oh my God.
This is so sickening. It makes my body hurt. Vernon did more than teach him about embalming, though. He also taught him all about our favorite subject, the occult. Yay. So here's a quote from the article on ThoughtCo. In June 1977, he looked into it further and decided to join. This is where he met his spiritual guide, Duncan, who was at one time a doctor. Harvey attributes Duncan to helping him decide on who would be his next victim to die.
Thanks, Duncan.
So he's like, oh, I have a spirit guide. He's telling me who to murder. I'm like, I don't think that's how this works, bud. I don't think that's quite what a spirit guide, as much as it's like an Elmo demon or something.
It's exactly like an Elmo demon,
honestly.
Actually.
He probably, yeah. That sounds
pretty sure. It's actually Kermit.
I'm actually pretty positive. Yeah. No, you leave Kermit out of this, my friend.
A dancing spirit.
Okay. So March 31st, 1971 was Harvey's last day at Marymount Hospital after he was arrested, but not for murder, for burglary.
Oh, okay.
Even though he'd been murdering dozens of people, he was arrested for burglary. So apparently he had drunkenly attempted to burglarize an apartment and was caught. And after he was arrested, he was so wasted that he also confessed to being a murderer.
Wow. Okay.
Not very careful. But an extensive investigation failed to turn up any evidence that he had killed anyone, so they thought he was lying, and he only faced burglary charges.
They were like, oh, you're just being funny.
You silly goose.
You're such a silly goose. You're noodles.
Don, you're fucking noodles, so man. Mayor Noodle Town, am I kidding, or what? Okay. At this point, he decides to head out of town, out of Noodle Town, I assume. Actually, he heads right straight into the middle of...
fucking dives into Noodle Town.
Like, downtown Noodle Town.
Into the Marinara Lake.
Okay.
No? Okay.
No, I'm on board.
Okay, cool.
At this point, he decides to head out of town. He enlists in the U.S. Air Force, but after two failed suicide attempts, he was sent home with an honorable discharge for medical reasons. He spent some time at the Cardinal Hill Convalescent Hospital in Lexington, Kentucky, which I looked up and it still exists. However, now it's called the Cardinal Hill Rehabilitation Hospital.
Fun fact.
Shout out to all our friends there. Sorry to put your name out with this story. After his release in 75, he moved back to Cincinnati and landed a night position in the morgue. I mean, seriously, at the VA hospital there.
Okay.
It's believed that during this time, he killed at least 15 patients, 15 additional patients, to be clear.
Oh, wow. Okay.
By this point, he had started experimenting.
This is where the Marinara River comes in.
More like the Cyanide River.
Okay. Oh, shit. Okay.
Yeah. He experimented with... This is so fucked, guys. He experimented with cyanide, arsenic, rat poison, and petroleum distillates. You know, those. Which he would put into foods, fruit juices, and pies, and would also put into people's IVs.
Oh, my God.
He also experimented by administering fluid tainted with Hep B and HIV. Like, he would, like, put HIV virus into fluids and then inject them into people. Like, what? Why?
That's atrocious.
What are you doing? So, like...
Goose cam.
Injecting people with hepatitis B did result in hepatitis infection, but...
Shit.
But no HIV, and it often... This is his, like, I guess, research study. Often ended with illness, but typically not death. That doesn't mean try it, I guess, is my caveat on that one.
Yeah.
But now his murderous tendencies began to extend outside of his work, outside of the workplace. Took his work home, I guess you might say.
Sure.
So he had been in several relationships at this point. He moved in with one of his lovers, whose name was Carl Howler. But when he learned that Carl was cheating on him, he began poisoning his food with arsenic as a way to keep him at the house. So, like... Almost just like he was too sick to leave, so he couldn't cheat on him.
Got it.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So he did not kill him, but he kept him very ill. His next victim was one of Carl's friends, who he thought was interfering too much in their relationship. So instead of poisoning her with arsenic like he did Carl, he infected her with Hep B.
Fuck.
And also tried to infect her with the AIDS virus, which failed.
Oh, my God.
I know. Like, this is just so fucking crazy. Next up was his neighbor, Helen Metzger. He felt that she was a threat to his relationship with Carl, too. I don't know what Helen ever did to you, Carl, yeah. But okay.
Looked at you weird?
So he laced her jar of mayonnaise with arsenic.
Oh, my God.
What
a specific way
to... I know! And also, how do you get her jar of mayonnaise? You're like, can I borrow that?
Okay. Or, like, you break in, like, just to open her fridge? Like, you couldn't... Okay, sorry.
Yeah, right? Like, you're like, somebody... It feels like someone broke in the house, but there's only one jar of mayonnaise that's on the counter.
Ugh.
Just a weird crime. But so that didn't work. The mayonnaise did not kill her, excuse me. And when he realized it didn't work, he baked her a pie filled with arsenic and she died.
Shit.
Yeah. I guess don't. It's just so hard. I'm like, don't eat food from people. But I'm like, I always eat food from people. Like,
also, you should be able to trust your neighbor.
Exactly. Like, it's not Helen's fault. She got a pie from her neighbor. Mm. That's a very lovely thing. Remember, my neighbor just gave me a bag of lemons.
Yeah.
That I'm actually thinking of making a pie with. So who's to
say? I don't
want to
eat any of it. I'll tell you that.
She's lovely.
For many reasons.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess that's true. You have What about...
No, I don't want it.
You don't want any of it? Okay, fine. Not a lemon square? Those are my favorite.
No, I'm not a lemon pastry fan.
I love lemon squares. Okay. So he baked her a pie filled with arsenic. She unfortunately died. On April 25th, 1983, following an argument with Carl's parents, Harvey stopped poisoning their food with arsenic, and 4 days after the initial poisoning... Okay.
You're okay.
I'm trying to wrap my brain around this. Arsenic pie. April 25th, 1983, following an argument with Carl's parents, his sick boyfriend, Harvey started poisoning... Oh, I said stopped poisoning. That's what I was confused.
Got it.
Started poisoning.
That is a tricky... game changer there.
Started
the killer
stopped.
Stopped killing.
Yeah, but like people that he apparently wasn't killing. So okay, he started poisoning his in-laws basically. So
got it.
Carl was sick at home.
Yeah,
he had an argument with Carl's parents, and then he started poisoning their food too. Which I'm like, how does he have access to all their food? I don't know.
How does he have this much access to arsenic?
He works at a fucking... Oh, I don't know. Do they have arsenic at the hospital?
I guess.
I mean, it's the 70s. I feel like you could probably just find arsenic somewhere.
I guess so.
So he started poisoning his in-laws, basically, with arsenic as well. And then 4 days after the initial poisoning, Carl's father, Henry Howler, was dead after suffering a stroke. On the night that he died, Harvey visited him at the hospital to check on him.
Okay.
Like, he had put him there.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Like, he had poisoned his father-in-law, and then when he was in the hospital...
He went to go check on him,
and he brought him some pudding.
Okay.
And it was tainted with arsenic, and it killed him.
So arsenic is his favorite weapon so far.
Yeah, since the AIDS virus didn't work, arsenic is becoming his favorite tool.
Got it.
His attempts to kill Carl's mother continued, but she survived every single attempt.
What a badass.
I know. In January 1984, Carl asked Harvey to please move out of his apartment. So Harvey was pissed. He felt rejected, obviously. He was angry. He tried several times. He's like, I've been keeping Carl sick this whole time. Now I'm going to just try to kill him.
Oh, right, because if he moves out, then all of a sudden he's not going to be able to get him sick anymore.
Right. And so he failed. And it's like he basically poisoned everyone in, like, Carl's circle. Like, anyone that he felt was threatening.
Right, and he probably had some mentality of, like, I've done all of this for you, and now you want me gone.
Right. And so he literally killed, like, anyone he thought was in the way of their relationship. Right. And so now he wants to end the relationship.
Well, also, poor Harvey, he's probably wondering, like, why is everyone dropping, like, flies?
Well, not Harvey. Carl.
Carl, yeah.
He's probably like, why am I murdering everyone? No. Carl's the boyfriend.
Yeah.
Harvey's the angel of death.
Right.
Yeah, so... He tried to poison Carl many times before he moved out and failed. So he was not able to do it. But despite this, like, murderous rampage, he was somehow excelling at his job. In March of 1985, he was promoted to morgue supervisor. Every little boy's dream. But a few months later, security guards found a gun in his gym bag and he was forced to resign. Unfortunately, the incident was never documented in any of his employment records, so he had a fully clean record and was...
So he's able to get a job anywhere else.
Immediately, exactly. So he went straight to Cincinnati Drake Memorial Hospital and got a job there. In his own sick way, he quote-unquote thrived because he had control of live patients again. Remember, he was like at a morgue,
yeah.
And so he was killing people at his home, and now he's like back at a hospital where he has control of
killing. But at some point, like, doesn't everyone see, like, oh, every person we put him in charge of dies? Like, maybe he shouldn't be in charge of people anymore.
Yeah, you'd think so.
Okay.
Maybe.
Great.
Maybe you'd think so, but apparently not.
Not me.
So from April 1986 to March 1987, so a little under a year, Donald Harvey killed 26 patients.
Okay. That's terrible.
In like 11 months.
26?
Yes. He described them as mercy killings, saying he hated to see sick people suffer and they were now better off because of him.
Hmm.
But the spree had to end somewhere, and it ended with 44-year-old John Powell, Donald Harvey's last known victim.
Okay.
Powell had been in a motorcycle accident, and in Ohio, so if you die in any motor vehicle accident in Ohio, it requires an autopsy by law.
Okay.
And so the forensic pathologist who performed the autopsy happened to catch a whiff of something strange.
The smell of decay?
A strange almond smell.
Oh, cyanide.
Which we all know is what cyanide smells like. So, the forensic pathologist, according to the research report, knew that foul play was afoot. LOL. Mm. That's literally the exact line.
Afoot.
Also, I mean, I've probably said this before, but fun fact, only 60% of people are able to detect the smell of cyanide. So, it's actually very fortunate that he was able to detect it.
Yeah.
So, Cincinnati police immediately conducted an investigation. Employees were given the option. So they were like, somebody at this hospital basically injected him with cyanide.
Yes.
So Cincinnati police went to the hospital, said to the employees, you are able to voluntarily take a lie detector test. But of course, Harvey called in sick on the day he was scheduled for this lie detector test. He soon became the lead suspect in Powell's murder, especially after investigators learned he had a really super fun nickname at work, Angel of Death.
Okay, well, because they all knew that everyone was dying under his...
It's just hilarious, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so funny.
So cute. It was truly the nickname Angel of Death was given to him by his coworkers because it was such a funny coincidence that he always happened to be around when patients died.
Like, what do you say at that? But then stop. If that's a superstition we're all aware of, then like, why are people saying like, okay, so your doctor is going to be
that's
Dr.
funny,
Harvey.
Right.
Like, ha ha ha. But don't worry. Everyone he watches dies. Ha ha ha. Have fun.
Yeah. Isn't that funny? We call him the Angel of Death. LOL. And he's not even a doctor, by the way. He literally... started doing this at age 18 with no medical training, and he's still here. Okay, so they gave him this hilariously fun nickname of Angel of Death because patients were always dying around him. Haha. and by the way, patient deaths had more than doubled since he began working at the hospital.
Hell surprise.
More than doubled at this entire hospital.
Because of him.
Because
of him. And everyone's still laughing.
Everyone just thinks it's hilarious. So a search of Harvey's apartment turned up enough incriminating evidence to arrest him for aggravated first-degree murder. He confessed almost immediately, explaining that he had killed Powell because he felt sorry for him and his family. But Powell was not even that. Like, he had been hurt in the accident, but it wasn't like he was on life support or anything.
Gotcha.
Like, he murdered him.
Yes.
He was not better off for anybody.
Right.
So when he was brought to trial, authorities had enough evidence to convict him for the murders of 37 people.
Holy
That's
shit.
How clearly they knew. However, he later admitted that the number was closer to 70. He explained, quote, I felt what I was doing was right. I was putting the people out of their misery.
Ugh.
I know. It's like really stomach churning. I hope if I'm ever sick and full of tubes or on a respirator, someone will come and end it.
So just like putting your opinions on someone else's life.
Yeah. Got when it. They're not even that sick. Like, a lot of these people weren't even ill.
Yeah, they could have had like a broken arm.
Yeah. And also he was experimenting. It wasn't like, oh, the quickest painless death.
Yeah.
He was like, let me put AIDS in you.
Let me think about embalming you alive.
Right. Oh. And also people like the neighbor who he just decided he was mad at. Like, that's not Angel of Death. That's not like saying, oh, they're better off.
Right.
You're maybe better off. He also said the killings gave him a sense of satisfaction and almost happiness.
Oh, I mean, almost happiness. Yeah. So he's not even fucking fulfilled.
He's still not even. Yeah, right. The murders gave him a sense of power and control that he felt he couldn't find anywhere else in life. God, what a sicko. So at this point, Harvey knew his only chance to avoid the death penalty was to accept a plea bargain. He agreed to...
Oh, so he didn't want to die? That's interesting.
I know!
I'm sure everyone else didn't want to either.
They were like, we're going to inject you with... It's pretty quick. We're going to inject you. And he's like, oh, no.
Right.
I have bad veins. Sorry.
It's like, I actually don't want to. I don't consent. The others didn't either.
I don't consent. Right. Fuck.
Oh, yeah.
What a dick. He agreed to a full confession in exchange for life in prison. He was sentenced to 4 consecutive 20-year sentences. And a few months later, he confessed to 15 more murders and was then sentenced to 8 life terms plus 20 years. He was incarcerated at the Toledo Correctional Institution, and on March 28, 2017, he was found lying in his cell, having been beaten severely by another inmate. He died 2 years later, and all in all, Donald Harvey, he has passed, but he confessed to 87 murders. Not all of the claims could be fully verified. The 37 were, so there's that giant number. But if his counts are true and accurate, that makes Donald Harvey one of the most prolific serial killers in U.S. history.
Holy shit.
And that is the story of Donald Harvey, the Angel of Death.
Yikes. Yikes.
What for yikes. Real?
That's fucking noodles.
Ooh, it's so noodles. Honestly, it's just sad.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's scary. I think it's really scary, too, that like... You know, if you're ill or whatever, you put yourself, your life, your health, your life
at the hands of others,
of somebody who's dedicated to like bettering you and like do no harm. You know, I mean, that's like the first rule. And then this person is literally like, well, let's see what happens if I put this in your catheter or this in your. And there were other.
I mean, it makes you scared because at some point, statistically, most of us will end up in a hospital at some point for something, regardless of how small or big. But, like, then it makes you wonder, like, who am I allowing around me to make me better?
Yeah.
Because someone might be there to do the exact opposite.
Yeah. That being said, go see your doctor if you're ill. I'm not saying don't seek medical help. I'm just saying it's scary that people like this take advantage, and it's scary. I mean, even my last week's story of, like, people on Tinder, I'm not saying don't trust people that you want to hook up with or meet or date. I'm just saying
it's only a fraction of a percentage likely, but also that one percentage, like, you never know who it's going to happen to.
It's just terrifying. Really, really scary. So be safe out there, folks.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah, so that's that, I guess.
Thank you for coming to apparently an Ohio show.
I know.
I
don't know what that means. Is that an omen? Who's to say? I mean, there were no Walters this time around.
That's true.
However, Carl showed up again, so.
Guys, I'm getting nervous about Walters. They are showing up left and right.
Crazy Carl.
So I guess that's it. Guess happy that's February.
It. I know. Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, this is Valentine's Day weekend, or was that last weekend?
I have no idea, but I'm with my Valentine here.
That's the truth.
And we hope you guys have a lovely, happy winter. I know it's probably cold and gloomy. As someone who gets terrible seasonal affective disorder, I hope you're all doing okay. Get one of those lights that has from Costco that has, like, sunshine in it.
I need one of those.
Get your vitamin D levels up.
Christine, are you listening? I need one of those.
Well, we're in LA. Okay, yeah, but okay, sure. You can sit under Skylar and get some sunlight.
Ugh, why does Skylar have a hole? Why does Deb have a hole?
I'm actually a little concerned because Skylar seems to have moved for the first time.
I don't see most of the web
Deb
anymore.
Deb the web has shifted slightly, and I'm a little anxious about it.
I'm nervous. Did Deb the web float down?
I think Deb the web's coming to meet you in person.
That being said, thank you so much for listening. You can find all of our information at thatswhywedrink.com.
That's right. Follow us on social medias and check out our website.
On the SMs.
On the SM. And we will talk to you soon, folks. We love you. That's
why
we
drink.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.